Hey, welcome back to The Garden Gal. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And before we get into the crop of the month, which is winter squash, we're going to talk a little bit about something we talked about last week, Jelaine, or last month. Jelaine, you weren't here.
No, I wasn't.
But we started talking about garlic. And Teresa had said that most of the garlic comes from where, Teresa?
California. At least the garlic you see in the grocery store.
Comes from California. And we were wondering if there were any commercial growers of garlic. And Jelaine, why don't you tell your story?
Well, one of our listeners I saw this past weekend, her name is Darlene, and she had heard the program, and she loves listening, and she likes the Garden Gal. And
she likes the Garden Gal.
You know, and the Garden Gal just happened to say she didn't know of any garlic farms in Michigan.
Right.
Doesn't mean there weren't any or aren't any. You just, Teresa, didn't know them. Right. And anyways, we were at a marriage retreat, I was, and she was, and her husband happened to be sitting next to somebody. They started talking to him, found out they are garlic farmers here in Michigan, in North Branch, Michigan, which I believe is north of Lapeer. And so it was interesting. Then she introduced me to him. She said, you need to know about it, and you need to let your garden gal know that there is at least one. And, you know, they do commercial. They're organic. And it just sounded, you know, take very good care of this.
And this was, if you want to go online and look at some things, folks, it's fascinating. We've been looking at Gravel Creek Farms?
GravelCreekFarms.com.
Yeah, you could take a peek at that. But as we, you know, continue to speak about different things, because Teresa's going to be here all winter. We're going to be talking about different things, obviously, to get ready for spring planting and other things like that. But there's a lot of other topics that we can cover. And I was just fascinated, Teresa, with that topic of garlic. I love garlic. I think most people do. It's just really wonderful in any type of a sauce or
has a nice flavor.
Soups and, you know, other things like that. Garlic, who doesn't like garlic bread? I mean, wow, that just smells wonderful. And it's interesting. I didn't even realize that they have so many different types of garlic.
But
that only makes sense. It only makes sense as we go through there. So anyway, welcome back. And we're going to be talking about our crop of the month, winter squash. Now, Teresa, I just want you to know, I'm really not a squash person. I do not like the summer squashes, the zucchinis and, well, summer squash and some of those other ones. Winter squash, I can handle. I really like that. And in fact, I like making squash smoothies. Now, people are going to go, ick. I can just hear them already. But if you mix dates in with the squash after the squash has been cooked, and you mix them together with some, now I use almond milk, but other people could just use cow's milk, or they could use soy milk or whatever they wanted to. And you put the dates in there. It tastes just like pumpkin pie. And it is just wonderful. I don't know if you've ever had it before, but.
No, I haven't. But I mean, when I think of squash, I think of pumpkin.
Well, when you look on a lot of side of the cans that say filling for pies, a lot of times it is squash. It's not really. Is pumpkin considered a squash?
It is.
Okay.
Botanically, pumpkin is a squash.
All right. And so so tell us about winter squash. You know, it takes a little longer for it to come to fruition. And what are the green ones? Is it acorn squash?
Acorn are
I
the
really
ones
like
that are
those.
Green, yeah.
Yeah, what are some of the other kinds?
The thing about winter squash is there are so many kinds. There are those green ones that are probably the most common ones, and those are called acorn squashes. We have delicata squash, which is kind of an oblong squash, and it's striped buff color and green, so it's kind of pretty.
Wow.
And then you have the sweet dumplings that are kind of like, if you take that idea of a delicata squash and you take the idea of an acorn squash and you combine them, and then you add a little bit of orange to the skin, they're very beautiful. They're often ornamental.
Okay.
So those are all really tasty.
Are those the ones that kind of have bumps on them? Do they have bumps?
No, not really.
Are they the bigger ones? I've seen
They're
some.
Small. Sweet
are
dumplings
small?
Are pretty small.
What are those great big ones that are the winter squash?
Probably they're squash in the Hubbard family.
Okay.
They look almost warty.
Yeah.
Those are probably Hubbard squash.
Because you could feed a family of 100 with those things. Yeah, there's a lot of squash in those things.
And there's more. There's buttercup, which is, if you like dry squash, they're probably our driest squashes. And you can tell those by they have a large button on the end of them. And that's a buttercup. There are ones called kabocha, which are pretty round. They almost look like a pumpkin. Sometimes they're orange varieties, sometimes they're green varieties, but they're round and they're larger. Then we have spaghetti squash, which when you cook it and you fluff it with a fork, it breaks into strands like spaghetti. And we have our butternut, my personal favorite, which is oblong with a bulb at the end. And then the Hubbards, which you mentioned, that are the very large ones.
Now, does anybody have specific favorites, here in Michigan and across the United States? Do you think one is more favorite than another?
I think in New England you see the Hubbard squashes more than you see them here. That's all I can tell you about regionalism, because they'll all grow in the Northeast and in the Midwest, and it's just a matter of what do you personally like.
Do people buy them a lot of times, too, for decoration?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times.
Like on their steps and mm-hmm. some of the other, especially the bigger ones like mm-hmm. you were talking about. What were the ones with the knobs on them and stuff?
The Hubbards. Hubbard.
Is that the Hubbards? That like
generally,
that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that can get really large.
And you were mentioning that there's so many different colors of these different squashes. That's interesting.
Blue, green, buff, orange, reddish.
Now, why do deer like squash?
They're sweet and they have lots of calories.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. If you think about, we need calories to sustain us, and a lot of vegetables aren't very high in calories, but the winter squash are. They have lots of nutrients, for a vegetable.
That's the name, right?
Yeah. For a vegetable, they're pretty high in calories, so that they're a food that can keep you going through the winter.
Now, do you guys have recipes that you hand out, or does the extension office, when it comes to like squash recipes and other things? Because you can make soup out of the squash. I've seen people do.
Yeah. Short answer is no, I don't have recipes that I hand out. But, any cookbook is going to have squash recipes in it. And, of course, the internet, you type in squash recipe and you'll get hundreds of results.
So when do you plant and when do you harvest and how do you take care of them?
The winter squashes, especially the larger ones, they take every bit of heat that we can give them up here in the north. So here in Wexford County, I would recommend people consider starting their squashes indoors 2 weeks before our last frost, just to make sure that they can get enough heat over the summer to get those plants all the way to maturity, especially the larger squash. The smaller squash, you don't need to do that. But with the larger squash, those take longer. So I would start them in mid-May up here.
In mid-May?
In mid-May.
Okay. And now, I notice a lot of times, too, in McBain, where I used to live, we had really clay-like soil.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the squash, because it would be on the ground, would rot.
Uh-huh.
Do you need to move those a lot? Do you need to put straw underneath them, cardboard? What do you do?
If you have a situation with clay where you are getting rot of the fruit or maybe some rot of the vines, then I would put some straw underneath the squashes, or forming a nice thick layer of straw, and that'll keep them up off the ground and help prevent that rot from happening.
Can you injure the squash when you move it? I mean, is there...
Yeah, actually, until you cure the squash, the skin is rather tender, so you do want to handle them delicately. Try not to scratch them with your hands or any piece of equipment or a tool, because, when they're young and they're developing and before they're cured, their surface can be scratched quite easily.
So let's say that you grow a squash and you really like the outside of it,
mm-hmm.
Can you cure the outside of that similar to like a gourd, and will it last, or is it just going to, push comes to shove, it's just going to kind of melt into itself and disappear?
It depends on the variety of squash. If you look at the Hubbards and the butternuts, they'll keep in storage for 6 months if they're cured properly. Mm. The other ones like acorn, they're not going to keep usually much more than 3 months in a homeowner kind of storage. There are commercial climate controlled storages where they've figured out how to do it for longer. But if you're thinking of what the average homeowner has, it's 1 to 3 months for our smaller squashes. The larger squashes with the harder rinds, they can go maybe up to 6 months, but 6 months is really the upper limit.
And a great idea, you could put those in the root cellar that we talked about on segment two?
Actually, you don't need to put squash in a root cellar. Okay. Just a basement that's cool, that's, say, between 50, 60 degrees and dry, they'll do just fine in that kind of setting.
Wow. If you just tuned in, I'm George Corliss. Jelaine Fenner is here with me, and we also have Teresa Williams, the garden gal, with us. And we're talking about winter squash in this last segment. Tell us about managing insects, Teresa.
Well, there's three insects to watch out for with winter squash that can cause you all kinds of problems. The first one is it's just called a squash bug. And these bugs, they use, they have piercing mouth parts, and they'll suck the sap out of the leaves. And that can interrupt the flow of water in the plants, the flow of nutrients in the plants, and they can cause wilting.
Okay, I've heard that the squash bugs like a lot of different variety of plants, just not squash. Is that true?
I've only had a problem with them on squash, winter and summer.
We had some families down around the Tustin area that had a problem with them on their tomatoes.
Oh, really?
And I think their potatoes also, which was, I'd never heard of such a thing. But
are they sure they were squash bugs?
Yes, they were sure.
And not stink bugs?
No, it wasn't stink bugs.
I have not personally seen that.
Okay.
The other one is called a squash vine borer, and it just like its name sounds, it will bore into the vine of the squash, and again, it's disrupting the flow of water and disrupting the flow of nutrients. And the other thing we need to think, or other insect we need to think about, is a very small one called a cucumber beetle, and it isn't the insect itself that harms the plant, but this insect carries a disease called bacterial wilt, and the bacterial wilt can harm the plant. So with all three of these, really the best thing to do is to prevent them. And the way you can do that is to, when you just set them out, either if you're setting out transplants or if you're planting them directly in the garden with seeds, cover those plants with something called floating row cover. And that's just a really, really thin polyester fabric that lets through light, it lets through rain. If you erect some wire hoops over the plant, put this floating row cover over those hoops, bury the edges of the row cover, you can keep the bugs out until the squashes are putting out lots of blossoms, which is where the fruit will come from. Then you can take the row cover off. And by that time, most of the plants are big enough, they're healthy enough, that these insects aren't going to do them in.
Now, when you're talking about these blossoms, how many blossoms do you want per plant or per vine? Is there like a maximum? Because sometimes, like with the tomatoes, you start pinching them off after a while so that the fruit will grow that you have there. Is it similar to squash?
I've never had to pinch, but the plant seems to self-regulate fairly well. On a squash, unlike a tomato and unlike most other plants, there are both female blossoms and male blossoms, and the male blossoms come out first. And you can have all the male blossoms you want. They're not going to produce fruit. It's only the females that are going to produce the fruit.
So here I am out in my garden think that dumb plant isn't producing any fruit, and that's the reason why.
Got blossoms.
Well, most plants have both the male and female blossoms on one plant, but did your pollinators come and pollinate those plants? Because if it has the two blossoms, a male blossom and a female blossom, that's a plant that needs an insect or a person to come and pollinate it.
Okay, so now I have a question. When you talked about the cucumber beetles, and they have a bacterial
wilt.
Okay, and you said there's no treatment for this disease?
Yeah, there's no treatment, so you have to prevent it.
So how do you prevent it?
By keeping those squash plants covered with floating row cover.
Okay.
Until they're mature enough to handle those things?
Yeah, until they're producing, you can look through, it's thin enough you can look through it. You don't need to uncover it when just the male blossoms are out. Wait until the female blossoms come out and then uncover it. And most of the time, those plants, at least for winter squash, are going to be sturdy enough, big enough, that they can handle those insects.
Are the blossoms different colors? How do you tell the difference?
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering.
The blossoms are the same color, so it's not by color. But if you look at the base of the blossom, on a female blossom, there's going to be a little round ball at the base of the bloom, and that's where the squash is going to develop from. So you look for a little round ball at the bottom, okay, the base of the flower. That's a female blossom. If there's just a flower attached directly to the stem, that's a male blossom.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And Teresa, what about managing disease? How do we do that?
Most of those, the bacteria, you manage the insect for to prevent the disease. The other disease that the squash are susceptible to is one called powdery mildew, which is a fungal disease. For that, when you're laying out your garden, if you can increase airflow to where the squash are and not plant them too densely, that increased airflow will help to have the leaves dry off quickly. The more quickly the leaves dry off, the less likely the fungus can take a hold. You can try spraying with some compounds, and these are all compounds acceptable in organic production. They fall into three classes. One is an element-based one, like sulfur or copper. Another class is there are beneficial bacteria that can help against fungal diseases. And another class is plant oils. And especially if you rotate these sprays once every 7 to 10 days after you take those row covers off, that can do a lot to help prevent the mildew from attacking your plants.
Okay. And when we're talking about squash, how much water do they need? I mean, do they need as much as like tomatoes and some of the other things? Or
pretty comparable,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, to keep that, because there's a lot of water, I would think.
The vines are huge, and all that plant green leaf growth requires water to sustain it.
We always found it was interesting. We usually planted the squash on the end of the garden, and it seemed like the bigger fruit, they snuck the vines off over into the grass. Did you ever find that?
Oh, yeah. They'll grow a long, long way.
Vines go wherever they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
It's just amazing. And folks, we just want to thank you so much for tuning in. And Teresa, next month, what are we going to be looking at?
Next month, we're going to take a slightly different track. We're going to look at some things related to taking care of our woodlands, our forests. December is a great time to do that because usually you can see the trees in the forest quite easily because all the leaves are down. But usually we don't have snow so deep enough that you can't get around them easily. We'll probably talk a little bit more in depth about the interplay of temperature and light and how that interplay affects plants. And one of my favorite crops, Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, it's
a lot of people don't like Brussels sprouts.
Really?
You know, I think a lot of people haven't had homegrown Brussels sprouts roasted in the oven.
Yes, yes.
Because world of difference, night and day. Mm-hmm. My husband and I had a conversation just yesterday about should we freeze them, and I said no, because you'll turn them into something that's not very delectable if you freeze them.
Yuck. I don't think they look really well to start out with myself.
Little tiny cabbages.
Yeah, they look like
meat. Like. Exactly. Yeah. And they just, I don't know. But they don't taste
like
good.
They don't taste like cabbage at all,
right.
I don't think.
I was really surprised when somebody made a broiled dinner.
The roasted.
Yeah,
yes.
Roasted. And they tasted excellent.
They do. You just got to learn how to cook them.
And
that's
it's
right.
Nice having all the different types of vegetables in a, you know, that like that. It's wonderful. Michigan is really something else, you know?
We have an incredible variety of food we can grow here.
We really do. Folks, thanks so much for tuning in. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jillian Fetter.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And we'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, folks.